inventory of ourselves. And five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our lives. So Todd, let's hear what you have to say.
Lift this up a little bit. I can't see my head on the computer. Hi, everybody. My name's Todd Backus, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to a little disclaimer before we get into the steps. This is my understanding of how I work the steps. I'm not here to read out of the book and educate you about what it says in the book. I did take notes, and I do read a couple paragraphs here and there, but the way I understand it, I'm sharing my experience with working the steps. It's important you understand that I did work the steps. I continue to work the steps. I try to live the steps. I really take it seriously. It did change my life. The 12 steps changed my life. They truly did. They produced that spiritual change that expelled the compulsion to drink and enabled me to lead a happy, productive life. It enabled me to get through some trials and some tribulations that went through life, and also helped me to celebrate the joy and the happiness that happened because of Alcoholics Anonymous. The way that I was taught about the steps, the first three steps are about trusting God. 4 through 10 are about cleaning house, and 11 and 12 are about helping others. Before I can help others, I need to clean house. But before I clean house, I need to trust God. And I learned to trust a God of my understanding in steps 1, 2, and 3. Built my foundation. That's what I did with the first three steps. And I remember vividly when I was coming up on the fourth step. And to be quite honest, I really truly was intimidated. I was kind of scared because that word moral made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I thought I was going to write down every filthy, rotten, dirty thing I've ever did in my life. And that's really not what the step is about. First thing, I used the big book and the steps that we took. Those are the two main points of reference that I used to write stuff down. But my first four step with this obnoxious guide, that I used the Hazelman guide for my first four step, and it went really, really, really deep, too deep, in my opinion. The way that I was taught, when I do a four step, the things that are most prevalent in my mind, and I had a lot of stuff that was prevalent in my mind, a lot of things that were bothering me. Those are the things that I was taught to address in the fourth step after I did that first one. I remember going down to the Alcanon Club, getting this Hazelman guide. And there's nothing, if you use the Hazelman guide, I'm not here to down it. I used it for the first time. And I did follow it. I truthfully don't remember everything that I wrote. I have no idea. But I remember writing a whole lot of stuff about what happened in my life, who I was pissed at, blah, blah, blah. But then, after that, I continued to do fourth steps. I'll get to the fifth step here in a bit. But I continued to do the fourth step, and about every couple of years. And when I did the fourth step again, when it came my time, used the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's set up so wonderful. The big book tells us that our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. There's something the matter with me. There's something the matter with me. That's the way I look at that. That's the way I perceive that. There's something the matter with me that causes me to drink. And I need to get down to those causes and conditions. I need to identify. And this is the it. You don't turn it over in step three. This is the it. We're finding out about the it. What is it that I'm turning over? That's what we're finding out about in step four. The big book also tells us that we made a searching, fearless, moral inventory of ourselves, or a searching, fact-finding, a fearless, a fact-facing, and moral, a truthful inventory. And that's all that word moral means. It's truth. What is the truth? Moral, made a truthful inventory of myself. And that was huge. That's absolutely huge. I was never so honest as I was when I did my first four step and my four steps after that, because I'm trying to discover what's the matter with me. These items that are need to be looked at and taken out, unsaleable goods is what Bill liked to refer to it. He made a comparison as a business. A business that doesn't take regular inventory goes broke. And I kind of apply that to my life. If I don't take a regular inventory myself, I'm going to break myself. The big book, it talks about resentment being the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. And I truly believe that. I've seen that. That's been my experience. That's truly been my experience. I've seen so many people go back out because of resentment. They got mad at somebody. Somebody said something. And rather than talking about they fold their arms, they took their ball and they went home. And unfortunately, I read about them in the paper a lot of times, and it's not pretty. One gentleman that a close friend, we used to go to his uncle's camp in Sheffield. He had one heck of a time doing a four-step. He just couldn't get past it. And I remember one time we're sitting there, and he's trying to tell me about something that he did, something from his past. And I thought we're going back and forth. We're just swapping stories. Here he had was trying to get some of this stuff out. It was his way of starting to look at the fourth step. And I started laughing, which that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And why do we laugh? Because we identify. We identify. He suffered from a thing called terminal uniqueness. He thought he was the only one that ever went through something like this. I laughed because, my God, I identified. Yeah, I did something like that, I'm thinking to myself. And he never did do a fourth and a fifth step. He couldn't get past it. And I don't know if he died drunk. I know he died, and I know that I saw him in detox several times for other stuff. So not being able to get honest with himself, and that's so, so critically important, to be honest. A searching, fact-finding, fact-facing, truthful inventory, an honest inventory. Big Book talks about it. It says, being convinced that self-manifested in various ways what had defeated us. And that's so true. I'm such a selfish person. And I got to see that when I did my first four step. It was so glaring. I was so worried about me and how these things affected me. I didn't look at my part in anything. It was always about what you did to me, not what I did to you. That didn't matter. It was about what I did to me. And when I listed, I was in, later on down the road after the Big Book, I was introduced to a book called The Steps We Took. It was written by Joe McHugh, one of Joe and Charlie tapes. And he does follow the Big Book. But I like his twist on it. I like he added a little bit different twist to it. With the Big Book, if you read it, it talks about, you read Mr. Brown, the cause, blah, blah, it goes right across. I'm resentful at the Big Book. The inventory goes something like this. It says, I'm resentful at, here's Mr. Brown, the cause, his attention, my wife, it affects my self-esteem, security, sex, blah, blah, it lists that. But one thing my sponsor taught me to do was after I put something that was negative, some truth about myself, that I should put something positive as well. Because when you're looking at this, some of this stuff wasn't really pleasant to look at. It was negative looking at those things. So he made sure that I balanced it with something positive. And that was important. And you know what? The guys that I sponsor today, I make sure they do that as well. That's in my opinion, I'm just giving you my opinion, my experience with working a step. I think it's critical that you also put something positive down there. Because you get so wrapped up in all this negative stuff that happened. Yeah, I'm accountable. I did do that. But I need to put something positive down too. The inventory list that from the steps we took, it follows the same Big Book format. The cause, I resentful at the cause. But then it goes a little bit deeper, which I really like about it. What part of self caused the fear? Fear, harm to others. That's in the resentments. Then in the fears. What part of self caused the fear? And then with the sexual inventory, what part of self caused harm to others? Then he adds a fourth one, the exact nature of wrong, the root cause. We're trying to get down to root causes in the fourth step. What is the root with a character defect, if you will? And they have a really nice cheat. that you can use. It's in the book. I have copies of it, and it works. I've used it several times. And again, when I sponsor somebody and we go over a four-step, I make sure that they put something positive. I don't care how simple it is. Something positive. Something positive. I remember my sponsor, he had to point stuff out to me. I didn't see anything good about me to start with. I really, truly didn't. He had to point those things out. And one of the things that I picked up, some of the tips I picked up from the steps we took, when I'm writing about resentments, I stay in that first column and I write all my resentments down and my fears. All my fears down. I do that just continuously. I don't go on to anything else. I keep one thought or one train of thought. I try to get everybody down on that. So I stay on the people that I have a resentment or the institutions or whatever that I'm fearful against. And then I look at, what did he or she do to me? The cause. Why am I resentful? Why am I fearful? How did I cause harm? I look at that in the next column. But I continue down the same column. Instead of going across, where you're going from one thought to another thought to another thought to another thought, I just straight down. I look, list all the people. Then I go down, list the cause. The same thing. Once we have the cause, we trace directly what part of myself was threatened. What was threatened in with me? What part of my, what was threatened? What's caused resentment? And once we know what instinct, whatever it was that was affected, then we can get down and look at the exact nature. What is the character defect associated with that resentment? And it's always me. It's always something with me. It doesn't have to do with the other person. They may have done something. They may have. That's entirely possible. But I'm not looking at what they did. I'm looking at me. It's about me. It's just about me. And that's so important. That's to put the focus on me. Because it's my inventory and I'm the one that's going to benefit from it. I need to be honest. As honest as I can that particular time. And fear, what I found out, was one of my major characters. Fear manifests itself in many, many, many ways. That was one of the things that keeps coming up in my four-step inventory, is fear. It seems like I get over it. I make it less. And then I go down the road, something else comes up, and I work on it, and I make it less. And what I really have come to believe with the steps, it's I'm this big onion. I'm this great big onion. And when I do a step, when I work the step, I'm just peeling off a layer. I'm getting down a little deeper. I'm identifying things a little deeper. I'm getting deeper. I'm getting into myself and understanding myself a little bit better each time that I work on a step. And the fourth step, I'm peeling that layer, and I'm just seeing fear manifest itself in different ways, but it's coming out. It's still fear. I remember sitting at a podium. I remember a girl that walked in one time. She's a very good-looking girl. I remember how fearful I was. Girls always intimidated me. But as I worked on that and I looked at the causes and conditions, that doesn't happen to me today. There's been progress made. I'm not as fearful as I was when I walked in, but I can't sit here and say I don't have fear. I work on it. Then the fifth step. I actually took all the notes that I wrote down. The big book does a really good job, in my opinion, of explaining how to work the fifth step. And I'm not going to read. There's some paragraphs that really kind of stand out to me. And it was really hard. I remember I did my first fifth step with Jim, and that was at the Hazelden inventory. And I remember I had him come over, and I remember how scared I really truly was. I was fearful. I was very fearful. I had this, I don't know how many pages of this inventory, and this inventory that I wrote down, I was never so honest with myself. Never so honest. So that paper was me. That was me. And then Jim came over, and I was sharing me with Jim and with the God of my understanding. We were looking at me. And I was very fearful. I truly was. But as the big book points out, it says this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal inefficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons for why we should do so. The best reason first, If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. I wanted, once I'm getting into the steps, once I'm looking at the steps and I'm working the steps, I wanted to get better. I wanted to get better, and I was willing to do whatever it took to get better. So if it meant sharing my story with somebody, no matter how scared I was willing. And that's exactly what I did. I shared it with Jim. And I don't remember, the thing that I remember with my first, fourth step and fifth step was there may have been some feedback. I honestly don't remember a lot of feedback with them, though. When I hear somebody's fifth step, I think the first thing that is crucial, that's absolutely critical, paramount, is that the person that I'm sharing it with, that I trust them 100%. I think that's paramount. That's my opinion only, because this is really important. Getting out what's inside, getting out on that paper and sharing with somebody is so important. And when somebody shares a fifth step with me, that's sacred. And what we talk about doesn't go anywhere. And I promise you that when I did a fifth step with somebody, I'm 100% certain that what I talked about with whoever it was, that I trusted that person 100%, because when I shared, I shared gut level AA. I didn't hold anything back because I want to get better. I'm not doing this stuff just to make a show for somebody. I'm doing this because this is saving my life. I truly believe that. And so when somebody is sharing with me, the neat thing about that is I'm not so damn unique as I thought I was when I first walked in. And so when they're sharing with me, the neat thing is I'm able to offer them some feedback based on the experience that I've had. I'm able to name a time and a place where I did a lot of the same things that they shared with me. I'm able to offer a little bit of insight. I have some experience with it. And it's been beneficial for both of us. I benefit more from somebody hearing somebody's fifth step than they do. But it benefits me when I do a fifth step. Because I'm cleansing myself. I'm getting that stuff out. I'm looking at it, and I'm having somebody else offer me feedback. Looking at it a different way. Identifying the defect. Expounding on the defect, whatever it happens to be. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep certain facts about themselves. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. I didn't want to get drunk. There's a saying in Alcoholics Anonymous that says, your secrets will keep you sick. And that is so true. So when I did a fourth and a fifth step, I was honest as I could be. I was gut level honest, gut level AA. I got that stuff out because I didn't want to get drunk again. Our secrets keep us sick. I've seen secrets keep people sick. I've seen secrets kill people. I mean, that's the truth. A good friend of mine, she just died this past summer, and she had a lot of skeletons in her closet. She could not get honest with herself. And invariably, she truly drank herself to death. Alcohol killed her. Direct result of alcohol. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory, all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. And I was thinking about that, and I shared this story. Maybe a lot of you heard it, maybe you haven't. But to talk about the pigeon that's scared, he's with the sponsor, and he's hearing his fifth step, and there's one thing he was never going to tell. One thing that happened in his life he was never going to share with anybody because he was so ashamed of it. And what happened is he got drunk and he screwed a chicken. And he swore to God he was never going to tell anybody about that, but he didn't want to get drunk either. And so when he's sitting there with his sponsor, he told his sponsor about this night that he screwed a chicken. His sponsor looked at him and said, did your chicken die too? There's a lot of wisdom in that. I'm not unique. Somebody, if I screwed a chicken and it died, somebody else in Alcoholics Anonymous screwed a chicken and it died. That's what it's saying. There's nothing that I did that somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous didn't do. That's so true. I'm not unique. There isn't anything that I've done that somebody else in Alcoholics Anonymous hasn't done. That was shot down. The term unique was shot down a long time ago. And there's another, I love this, we have no right to save our own skin at another person's expense. Such parts of our story we tell to someone who will understand yet be unaffected. The rules we must be to harden ourselves, but always considerate of others. I don't have any right to take anybody else down. The inventory is mine, it's not somebody else's. I need to look at myself. I need to keep the focus on me. This is my inventory. I'm trying to identify my defects. I'm not worried about yours, even if you were a part of it or a part of the thing that we did. I don't. It's on me, not you. Once we have taken this step of holding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had a certain spiritual belief, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. I don't remember being overly... Oh, what's the word that I'm looking for? I don't remember... You know, jumping up and down and this big light or anything like that happening. But I remember feeling better. I remember feeling relief. Because if you're like me, the steps that we talked about earlier, the 1, 2, and 3, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of garbage. I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of. A lot of people pissed me off. That's what I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with. And then we looked at the first step and identified that I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. Then I came to believe in this power greater than myself, and then I got to see that my life truly was insane and my drinking was insane. And then I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I made my decision to turn it over to work the rest of the steps. So in the fourth step, I identified it on paper. And now step 5, I shared it with somebody. And something that my sponsor Mike always taught me was a problem shared is half solved. Doesn't mean I'm done. I'm not done at step 5. I'm not done and wipe my hands and move on. There's other steps after that. We'll talk about that next week. What am I going to do with those character defects? Now that I've identified them, I have a name to them. And that's critical. It's critical. I have a name to these defects. These are the causes and these are the conditions. These are the things that send me back out. These are the things that cause me to drink. I know what they are now because they're in my inventory and I shared them with somebody. And it's time to move on. I don't want to wait. I want to move on to those right away. You've identified them. You don't want to sit there and rest on them. Maybe you want to get rid of them. So that's what the next couple steps are going to be. We're going to be talking about. And you know what, I'm looking at the time, and I know I really don't have a whole heck of a lot more to say about the steps, but that's been my experience. Other than I will tell you, I continue to work the 12 steps. I continue to do a fourth and a fifth step on occasion. It's not something that I did and forgot about. Things come up. I know a lot of people, there's opinion that you do that in step 10. I'm not here to argue with anybody. I go back in the fourth and the fifth and then the sixth and the seventh. That's what I do. I'm just telling you, I go back and I've done fourth and fifth steps many times in my sobriety, usually every couple years. The latest one I did was about a year ago. Fear coming back in my life. A major event happened in my life. I lost my employment of 28 years, and you can imagine everything that went along with that. But you know what? Sat down, wrote on paper the people, the institutions that I was resentful at, and the fears I had associated with that. I was honest. I continued to be honest, and I followed the steps we took. Bam, bam, just like we talked about earlier. Then I found somebody and I shared it. And they offered experience, and then they wrote and shared it back with me. And then I moved on to the rest of the steps to help alleviate it. So these things, it works. This stuff, it works. These things work. It's changed the person that I was into the person that I am today. And I'm so eternally grateful that I have a means to look at myself. I'm so grateful that I have a means to work on myself. I'm just a work in progress, and I'm certainly enjoying this journey of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I have. God bless you all. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Todd. So now we'll open things up for questions and answers. So if you're here in the room, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll get you the microphone. And if you're on Zoom, feel free to unmute yourself and just speak up whenever you have the opportunity.
Thank you, Todd. I can't get that chicken out of my... you know, scrambled eggs came to mind. When you're... when you're working with somebody on the fourth and fifth step, have you ever had an incident where someone did something illegal and told you, like, if I had somebody years ago before AA tell me he murdered somebody in Wintergreen Gorge. I don't know that, but it's never left my mind, you know, that could be. Have you ever had anything happen, or have you ever started and said, if it's something illegal, don't tell me? I think, if I remember right, I think when Bert and Judy used to be up here, I think Bert used to tell his, if it's illegal, don't tell me. So have you ever had that?
You know what? Of course. Not to that extent, but again, what they say is sacred. The only thing I suspect that you need to think about is when you're a priest. It talks about that, and I didn't read that. I didn't think that was that important, but though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained by an established religion. And one of the things a priest has is, I can't remember the exact term, but if you tell something to a priest, you go to confess, you tell something to a priest, they're bound. They cannot say that. It's not the same in Alcoholics Anonymous. So that is something to think about. I don't know. I think we've all done things illegal. I'm not speaking for everybody. We're all honest, 100% honest too. But I don't think there's anybody that hasn't done something. So to answer your question, yes. But again, it's sacred. When I'm hearing somebody's fist up, it's sacred, and it goes nowhere. I mean, bar for me to. I've done things that were illegal. And nobody has ever come back on me. But it talks about it. You're absolutely right. So that's a good point. Thank you.
Who else has a question for Todd?
Hi, Todd. Colleen.
Hi, Colleen.
So, say you're working with someone on their fourth step, and they do something that's completely against your moral values, and you want to be there for that person, but in the back of your mind, you're still like, oh my God, I can't believe you would do something like that. Like, how do you continue? Do you go on with that?
I'm not a judge. Yeah. No. That's none of my business. I'm just there for a sounding board and to offer any input that I have. If their moral compass isn't in line with mine, that's none of my business. And I'm not there, again, I'm not there to judge. I'm not the AA police. I'm just there to hear a fifth step. That's it.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Hi, Todd. Paul Alcoholic.
Hi, Paul.
Thanks. I know when I did my first four step, and I've sponsored people in the past who've had trouble identifying their character defects. I mean, they do a good job of, say, columns one, column two, and mostly with column three, and then it's like they're stuck. How do you help them overcome that, or how you overcame that yourself if you ever had that situation?
Again, Steps We Took, it really is a fantastic book, and it has a couple worksheets that outlines the four steps. And it does identify. I mean, it's so simple. It's just check marks. They really do the work for you. You look at it and you hear in the fourth step, what are the exact nature of my wrongs, faults, mistakes, defects, shortcomings. It identifies. It says selfishness. Was I selfish? Was I dishonest? self-seeking or frightened, inconsiderate. You look at that, and you can. I've working with somebody. That's where I offer insight, and I'll identify some of the things that perhaps are jumping out at me, and we'll make a list. And that's what we use for step six and step seven. We'll make a list, and a list of things that for them to work on with step six and step seven. It is tough, and I think I'll start out by saying the only wrong way to do a four step is not to do it. You know, there's no, that holds so many people back. How many people I've heard say, I'm going to do the perfect four step, and they hold off, and they hold off, and they hold off, and they hold off. They never do it because they're trying to do this perfect four step. You do whatever, you write down whatever is heavy on your head. You know, that guy that I cussed out last week at the grocery store because he gave me the wrong change, I really made him feel about that big. I guess that's more amends than anything, or the guy that cut me off in traffic. Oh my God, my daughter today. She was talking to my wife, and somebody did that to her, and she started screaming out. She says, "Oh no, Mac!" She called herself Todd. So that's something I need to work on. It's a defect. I'm impatient. So, yes, thank you.
Hey Todd, Eric Alcoholic.
Hi, Eric.
When you're working with somebody, and you mentioned earlier that when they do their four step and they have all these negative things down and you try to have them counteract that with positives, do you find it's like 10-to-1 ratio that they really struggle to find the positive things as opposed to all the negatives that come just really easy? And if so, do you help them find positives within themselves, or do you just let them kind of stew on it for a little bit?
No, that's what I'm there for, to point out the good points as well. That's what Jim did that for me. Maybe it wasn't, I didn't elaborate a whole lot, but when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm looking at the steps, the fourth step especially, that was the worst thing on earth in my head. I really thought I was a piece of garbage. I couldn't find anything good about myself. Now, it was changing as time was going on, that to be fair, it really was, but you know, in my head, I still didn't have a real good opinion of myself. And I remember writing a fourth step, and I remember calling Jim and saying, "Jim, there's nothing good about me." And he would say things like, and it's simple, but Todd, you take a shower every day, right? Think about getting somebody, go by somebody that doesn't take a shower every day. It's a good thing. You brush your teeth every day. But we had to get that simple. Then we started to look at other things, and he was able to point things out because he was around me. I talked to him every day, and he was able to point out positive things as well. So yes, as a sponsor, I do point out good things, help them see good things about themselves. Sure. That's a good, real good question. Go ahead, Terry. Hi.
Hi. So, when you're here in the fifth step, do you go to them? Do they come to you? Do you go to the beach? Like, where do you do a fifth step with somebody?
I have a garage. And I have a little man cave out back with a heater in it. I set up one chair for me, and then I set up another chair for them. And we also have a coffee can that we put in the middle. And the first thing we do is we say a prayer. And then they just start spouting out whatever's on their paper. And we go one line at a time. And we talk, we're thorough. We talk about we're thorough. Or if it's too cold out, my wife will head out, or she'll make herself unavailable. She'll leave, she'll go somewhere, and we'll go in the living room. But it's important that no distractions, no phones, no nothing. It's just gut level AA, just the person and me talking about their fifth step. That's a good question. All distractions as best we can, get them out of the way so we can be as fearless and as thorough and as searching and as honest as we possibly can. Thank you. Good question.
Thank you.
What is your opinion when you're doing a fifth step about burning or not burning someone's fourth step?
Like I said, it's important now when we're making amends. A lot of your amends are on that list. At least it's possible they should be on that list. So, of course, you're going to want to make copies of the people you owe an amends to. But the way that I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous, we always took my fourth step, went out, found it, and burned it. And that's what I do. And I don't know if a lot of you, some of you may or may not remember a young lady by the name of Gail. Gail E. She had moved to Florida. I think she moved back. But she talked about a fifth step that she heard, that somebody heard her fifth step. And I don't remember who heard it. Doesn't matter. They burned it and they watched the smoke. What happened was they burned it and went up. And then when they retreated, they didn't burn the whole way, but when they opened up, the only thing that was left were the positive things that she had written down. I mean, that's really, I get chills thinking about that now, how wonderful that was. And I do, I burn it. And what I say is, you give them up to God now. You give them up. You talked about it, now let it go. Because a lot of that stuff is haunting. I had to revisit a lot of that stuff. It's haunting, some of it, until you get on to the rest of the steps. So, yes, I burn them. You bet.
Who else has a question for Todd? Anybody else on Zoom? About here in the room, anybody else?
My buddy Kevin, of course.
We have a time limit, you know? Anyway, thanks again for coming out, Todd. It's always nice to hear you. You're a great guy, and I really respect you. You were talking about you burned the thing, and you said that you've done several fourth steps, and you do you find that you have repeaters?
Of course.
And how do you deal with that?
You know what? We talked about the onion earlier. And when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very fearful. I didn't know that. And so a lot of it came out on my fifth step. I wrote it down, and I'll get to that next week, because that's important. That's really good. And I believe every fifth step that I've ever given, every fourth step, every fifth step, had some sort of fear on there. And some of it was the same. Same fear of authority or whatever. So it's just layers of the onions that I'm peeling off, and I'm getting down to the causes and the deep, deep-seated stuff. So I really think that it's an ideal to be free of fear. I think it's an ideal to be free of resentments. I honestly don't look at free as resentments as a bad thing, and what I mean by that is it shows me I have something to work on. If one person is pissing me off, maybe it's a person, but if I got five people pissing me off, I better look at myself. It's just a trigger for me to, maybe I better sit down and get on paper what's going on. And that's happened. That happens. It really, truly does. I get into blinders on, I'm kind of skipping over things. People are really pissing off, and I need to start looking at causing conditions. Why am I pissed off all the time? I don't want to be pissed off all the time, so. And most of the time, there's some sort of fear associated with it. So yes, repeaters, that's a good way to put it. So fear does come up. It manifests itself in my fourth and fifth steps. Sometimes against the same person, but not usually. Usually if I work on a specific fear against somebody specific, I'm able to get rid of it, at least for now, because I can see my part in it. And I'll either avoid them or somehow make an amend if I owe an amend, and we become friends. It's a good, real good question. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Another thing is when you're working with somebody and they, you know, they finish their third step and it says, you know, start your fourth step. So do you give them those forms that are in the Joe McHugh book? You give them the forms?
When I work with, I love and it's going to come up, we'll talk about this a whole heck of a lot. I love the gut level AA, the one-on-one, the sharing with somebody, and I love, what I would love to do is we read out of the big book and we read out of the steps we took, we go right through it. We'll read Drop the Rock for the 6 and 7, we'll go through that stuff one-on-one. I think that there's so much to that, because not only is the person that I'm working with, I really truly believe they're getting some of it, but I really truly believe I'm getting more out of it. I'm understanding, I'm seeing myself, and I'm reading the book, and I'm going, oh, geez, there's me.
Again.
Especially 6 and 7, Drop the Rock, what a beautiful, what a wonderful book that is. But to be able to see myself, so yes, I love working with a person one-on-one, but that gut level AA, the talking back and forth, the reading, what we'll usually do is we'll take turns. We'll just read back and forth. I'll read a paragraph, they'll read a paragraph, and I'll stop, and I'll expound, I'll share something. Or if you have questions, stop. A lot of times I'll have questions. We'll just go back and forth, back and forth. It's really a truly, it's a spiritual experience to go through that. It enlightens me so much. I absolutely love doing that. Absolutely love it. So, yeah, I don't turn them loose other than to do the writing, but we go over the instructions. We go over the book. So they know what they're doing, and ask questions if they have questions. So yes, it's a very intertangled. It's not one on one. Like the step implies, it's we did it, and we worked the step together.
And do you give them a time limit to complete it?
I found that's probably the best way to do it, because Alki's one of their underlying characteristics is procrastination. You know, pick me, I fall in that category too. So, yes, I try to put a limit on them. I'll start out, and then I'll start. Do you have that done yet? Did you start? Do you have it done? And, okay, have it done. You'll be at my house on Friday or Saturday, whatever. I'm going to hear your fifth step, so be there.
Okay, so that's good. So then when they come to your man cave or wherever you do it, do you have like a time frame that you're doing, or are you just kind of just...
No time frame. As long as it takes.
As long as it takes.
I've been there for hours, and I've been there for half an hour. It just depends. Yeah, it at no time limit. That's just because there was never any time limit. You can't put a time limit on somebody's life. When you're dealing with somebody's life, you have to allow whatever it takes to get through it. You can't put a time limit on that. That's my thing. No phones, nothing. We're talking about you right now. No time limit. Nothing.
Okay. And last question. What happens to you when you're done? I mean, I know when I've listened to Fifth Steps, how does it affect you?
It's such an honor when somebody comes up and asks you to hear their Fifth Step.
Right.
So it's truly an honor, and I don't want any way to mess it up. I don't want any way to be a negative experience, because although what may be down that paper might be to them very horrible, for lack of a better word, I want them to come away feeling that, A, they feel enlightened. I want them to come away and feel full. You know, some sort of an experience, some sort of a change, some sort of a benefit from doing that, because it is, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful experience. I come out feeling so honored that somebody trusted me enough to hear about their hit down in that paper. It really makes me feel good.
So when you're completed with that and they leave, do you have a ritual or anything that you follow for you? In other words, it's exhausting emotionally, mentally, physical. It is an honor, but it physically takes and emotionally take a toll on you, or are you excited, or it doesn't affect you? Or
We're done.
We're done.
We're just... inside I feel the way I feel, but I'm when we're done.
Okay.
Time to move on.
Okay. So there.
Any last questions? All right. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, everybody. See you next week.
Again.